It's time to lead the people. The show for aspiring leaders at every level. If you want to boost your self-confidence, get noticed, and maximize your impact by leading others, you're in the right place. I'm your host, Matt Pepsel. Ready to lead? Follow me. My very special guest is an organizational psychologist who holds the title of Chancellor's Professor at University of North Carolina, Charlotte, for distinguished national, international, and interdisciplinary contributions. He's an award-winning teacher, has over 200 publications, has been cited well over 10,000 times in the academic literature, and was recipient of the very prestigious Humboldt Award for his research on meetings. And in fact, Adam Grant has called him the world's leading expert on how to fix meetings. He is Dr. Stephen G. Rogelberg. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Hey, thank you. It's so good to be here.
Meetings is not everyone's favorite topic. So my first question for you, what led you to develop such a deep interest and expertise in meetings and one-on-ones in particular?
Sure. As an organizational psychologist, I'm just drawn to study pain at work and try to identify science that can help rectify it. And clearly meetings are a fabulous target when it comes to pain. Now, one-on-one meetings was a different target because they weren't painful per se, but they just were not being used effectively to reach the tremendous potential that one-on-ones have. One-on-ones, unlike many meetings, are the one meeting that should not be an email.
It's so true. So true. And so as a professor, I have to ask you, what letter grade would you give us in terms of the average one-on-one state of meetings that we're having?
C-.
C-. Okay. That's probably pretty generous based on some of the managers I know. Well, so it's a huge problem, I think. And whenever I'm talking to executives, I like to make sure that I put a dollar figure on it. What do you think one-on-ones in general, how do you think about what it's costing companies?
You know, it's a tricky thing to cost out. Obviously, we have a ton of one-on-one encounters. And so if we identify all the one-on-one encounters, I mean, the costs are just hundreds of millions a day. I'm referring to a particular type of meeting. Would it be helpful for me to just take like 10 seconds and unpack what I mean by a one-on-one?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, great. So when I'm talking about a one-on-one meeting, what I'm talking about is a regular, reoccurring meeting between a manager and their directs that's orchestrated and facilitated by the manager, but it's not for them. It's for their directs. It's for their directs to be able to express what's on their minds, their challenges, their concerns, their worries. And they can broach issues from things related to their work, to their teams, to the broader organization. They can think short term, they can think long term. They can think the here and now, or they can think big picture, like in careers. It is a meeting to truly see your people. It's a meeting about connection. So that's what I refer to as a one-on-one meeting. And when we think about all the incredible outcomes associated with it, it's that type of a one-on-one meeting.
Now, some managers might feel that my calendar is already jammed. Yeah. I'm so busy. Like, do I have time to have these one-on-ones you're talking about?
You don't have time not to do them. They are requirements of being a leader. It's not a choice. It's not a choice. I mean, I could go through the math. I could tell you, yep, when you do these right, employees are more engaged. They're more successful. They're more aligned. They thrive more. They're good for you. They're really good for managers, because when their people are successful, that's a direct reflection on the manager. We also have data to suggest that when managers are doing these properly in a reoccurring way, they actually have less interruptions because people save their topics for the one-on-ones. We also know that adage that people don't leave bad jobs, they leave bad bosses. This is your opportunity to prove you're not a bad boss. So ultimately, if your employees are thriving and successful and you're keeping your best talent, the cost savings are remarkable. And so this notion of, oh, how am I going to find time? It's really just an inappropriate calculus. You've got to find the time. And there's other things that you could cut. So like I talk about in the book, how to cut other meetings. But this is just not one of those meetings. This is critical. especially as we think about work as being more distributed, right? We know employees just don't stay with their employers like they used to. We know employees don't have that same sense of connection that they used to. We need to do something about that, right? Bringing more humanity back to work is not only great from a values perspective, but it's a great investment.
Well, let's talk about how to do exactly that then. And you think about the setup, who should be scheduling the one-on-one meeting and how often should we be having them?
Yeah. So the manager is kind of making sure this happens, right? They have the power. And the research is quite clear that weekly or every other week yielded the most gains. We also know that when employees are asked what their desired preferences in, with regard to cadences, they also said once every week or every other week. And interestingly, it wasn't even dependent on the workload. Even when they were incredibly busy, they wanted these to happen. And that's just because they recognize this opportunity to be seen by your manager has the potential for incredible benefits.
And if I've got a regular schedule one-on-one, what would ideally happen before the meeting itself?
Yeah. So I do want, let me just add one thing to that last point, which is the regularity of it was actually more important than the amount of minutes. So even if you do these things for 20 to 25 minutes, but they're good minutes, minutes where you're really dialed in to the other person and what they're saying, that's fabulous. You don't need necessarily an hour. You can, but it's the regularity that matters. In terms of preparing for these, first of all, they do need a plan of action, but it's very lightweight. And so we do want to have some type of lightweight agenda of sorts, but the key is to actually have the direct heavily involved in its creation. A simple practice is you ask the direct to create a list of topics that they would like to talk about, but cue them to think big picture, small picture, cue them to think individual, team, and organization. Otherwise, they'll just broach topics that they think you want to hear. So involve them in the creation of the plan. Review your notes. You know, one of the real powerful things about one-on-one meetings is they tell the story of the employee, right? And because, you understand the challenges in the flow. And so reviewing those notes and then saying, hey, I know last time you mentioned X, how's that going, right? That elevates the conversation.
Hugely important. And then when you think about the open, I know a lot of managers just start instinctively by saying, hey, how are you doing today? And you say that that's not a great way to start. What's a better way to
open? So it's a natural question and I totally respect it. But unfortunately, when you ask someone how they are, they typically just give you an automatic response. I'm fine. I'm good. I'm the best, right? You don't get a really thoughtful response. And there's an alternative that the research provides, which is you ask someone, I'm really interested in how you are, but I'd love for you to answer on a 10-point scale with one being horrible and 10 being fantastic. How are you? When you ask it that way, next thing you know, you get scores in the sixes, the sevens, the fives, and now you have something to work with, right? Now you can say, tell me more. What can I do to help you become an eight? And so asking questions that promote meaningful exchanges is the goal, right? Because that's the whole essence of these one-on-ones. There's a depth to it, right? There's a true sense of connection. And, this is what people missed about the pandemic was not going into work. It was human connection, meaningful connection. And so this is that mechanism for connection.
I think we've been shocked to see the levels of isolation and loneliness among our remote workers. Yeah. It's something we hadn't thought we would be getting as we shifted to so much remote and hybrid work.
True.
So it seems like the one-on-one is a good antidote for that. When Agreed. You think about the manager, you talk extensively too about the manager's role during the one-on-one. I know that as managers, we got to where we are because we are great at solving problems. But what do you think about what's my job as the manager when I'm leading the one-on-one?
Well, I want managers to kind of act like you right now, because when you think about an excellent podcast host, it's a person that comes prepared, but is very flexible, is a great listener, is encouraging the person to talk, is really allowing the conversation to continue on their terms, on their terms. And if it takes some interesting twists, they're willing to go there. And so that's the type of stuff that we want to see in a manager. It's, you know, it's, they have to remind themselves this is not about them. I'm sure you do that. They need to talk less, listen more. You do that. So when people think about their favorite podcast hosts, that's kind of what they're doing. Now, there are times where you absolutely will ask your manager for advice and counsel. That's great. There's nothing wrong with that. There's absolutely times where the manager will share their perspective. You do that in your podcast interviews as well. That's okay. But it's just not about that, right? If you dominate these conversations with your perspective, then you don't need a guest. And so the essence of the manager is, you know, just getting really comfortable with questions such as, or statements such as, tell me more, help me understand, I'd love to hear more. What are your thoughts on handling that?
Yeah, there's a, we always talk about importance of being seen and heard. And I think I love that when you ask those questions, yeah, tell me more, you're taking an active interest in what I'm doing.
That's right. That's perfect.
As the one-on-one starts to, the time comes down, whether it's 15 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, whatever it might be, yeah, what's the best way to close a one-on-one?
Well, first of all, it's important to remember there has to be a close. These things need a conclusion. And the ideal component is to get clarity on what each party agreed to do. So it often comes from these that the manager says, okay, I'll do X, Y, and Z. And the employee says, I'll do X, Y, and Z. And then there's just clarity around that. And kind of like that handshake of sorts of commitments. And then ideally, you know, you take notes and because you want to capture the conversation, but also note-taking is a really great signal. You know, when an employee sees you taking notes physically with your hand on a piece of paper, they think that you really cared about that conversation. We also want to try to end on a more positive note. There's some really fun research out there. It's by a very famous scholar named Daniel Kahneman. And what he did was he randomly assigned people, and this is not about one-on-ones, but there's a connection. He randomly assigned people to two conditions. In condition one, people had to put their hands in ice-cold water. It really hurts. They had to do it for a minute. Other people were randomly assigned to a second condition. The second condition was the same. They had to put their hands in that same really cold water. And then after a minute, they actually had to put their hands in additional cold water. But that next set of cold water for that 30 seconds was slightly warmer, still miserable, but slightly warmer. And what they found was that those people in the second condition, despite having to put their hands in miserable water for longer, were actually willing to participate in future research on that topic because you ended on a more positive note. So look for opportunities to help that employee feel more confident and motivated.
Here's one of the things I learned early on when it comes to leadership. The best leaders know how to build trust and motivate their people. And there are two ways you can do this. The first is to spend a whole bunch of time you don't have fumbling around and trying to figure out what makes the people around you tick. I wouldn't recommend that approach. The better technique is to use readily available tools to fast forward the insights you need so you can spend more time leading and less time playing guessing games. One of my favorite people first tools comes from the Predictive Index. The Predictive Index, affectionately known as PI, makes it easy to understand what each individual on your team needs out of a manager so you can personalize your leadership approach to get the best results. I can tell you with 100% certainty that the PI tools work for me, and they'll work for you too. I was first introduced to the Predictive Index way back in 2007, and it changed my leadership. 10 years ago, I joined the company, and I've been proud to contribute to the development of talent optimization and the PI tools that make it possible in organizations of all shapes and sizes. Using PI, you can coach, motivate, and develop each of your direct reports on their terms so you can move up in your career with less stress. Visit predictiveindex.com to learn more. To make it even easier for you, I'll put a link in the show notes. And now, let's get back to the show. It is a very specific blueprint, very actionable. It seems like this is very straightforward stuff that we can do if the want to is there.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the book, you know, as you know, the book is called Glad We Met, The Art and Science of One-on-One Meetings. And I threw that word art in there And that's an important note, I think, that is worth mentioning. And that what I do is I don't lay out, I don't create some magic formula, because that the science doesn't support that. Instead, what I do is I lay out choices for managers, choices that are well-grounded in the science. And then the manager has to make choices based on who they are and who the other party is. And so that's the art part of it. I do talk about in the book things that the direct report can do to make these things better. So while the manager holds most of the responsibility, the employee does hold some. It does take two to tango.
Let's take a little about that just a little bit. So if I'm an employee, I want to make the most of my time, precious time with the manager. What's something I can do?
So there's a few things. First of all, you can't get what you need out of these meetings unless you know what you need. That sounds simple, but it's actually a really important note. So an employee really needs to think carefully about what they need from these. And therefore, if they're not asked questions that generate meeting those needs, they can broach it as well. So that's one thing. Second of all, they need to engage. You can't get out a lot of the conversation unless you're engaging. You need to be willing to ask for help. And you need to do it in a way that creates independence, not dependence. So dependent help seeking is where you just want the manager to solve your problem. That doesn't make you a better employee. Independent help seeking is really this idea that you're seeking information to help that allows you to solve your problem. That's key. Then you need to be present such that when managers display the listening and support behaviors that are needed in these one-on-ones, that you actually reinforce it and express gratitude. While we all know the importance of human connection, we're not great at it. We're not great at completely taking an interest in another person. We tend to be kind of egocentric listeners. So if that manager is behaving in a way where they're saying, hey, how can I support you? You want to be on top of it and say, I just want to thank you. I'm so grateful for this meeting. I appreciate so much that you're taking an interest. Those types of behaviors just increase the chances of them happening in the future.
I'm hearing you're humanizing the work experience through one-on-ones. It's incredibly powerful.
Great. I'm so glad.
It seems like it should be second nature, but it's not. You know, we just don't see that this is the default behavior inside of increasingly mechanistic, in some ways, organizations. So I think you're giving us a very clear roadmap, like I said, to get it right.
I'm really glad. Well, I mean, again, going back to the podcast example, right? You know, not all podcasts are the same.
Right.
Some podcasts, the host just doesn't get it. And some they do. And so it's a skill set that we all think we're good at, but we're not.
And I end up talking to a lot of HR leaders or executives that suspect that the one-on-ones aren't going so great in their organization. They just have this gut feel, and I'm certain they're right in many cases. My question for you is, what advice do you have, or what can executives and HR leaders do to encourage their level down leaders to be having better one-on-ones?
Well, they have to set the expectation that this is just what we do. You know, we value people in this organization. We recognize that the people make the place. We recognize that innovation is achieved through people. We recognize that we deal with challenges in our environment through the hard work and resilience of people. And so that you need to tell the folks that report into you who are managers that, you know, this is really important to you, to them, to the organization. And then help them level up their skills, you know, help provide some of that awareness, buy them a copy of the book, you know, because that will help them. But, you know, but the other thing is make sure that you're a good model of the behaviors that you want to see in others. So if you're telling people to run excellent one-on-ones, well, then make sure your house is in order, that you're engaging in excellent listening and providing support and following up. It's addictive. This is all addictive. When you do these right, everyone's benefiting, including you as a manager. You know, one of the things that we know about life satisfaction is that the greatest predictors, not money, it's not good health, it's actually helping of humans. That is the most robust determinant of how happy you are with your lives. So this action pays dividends.
I think it's such a powerful point. And you had brought up a Buddhist quote that you included in your book. And I'm just going to read it real quick. The value of life is not based on how long we live, but how much we contribute to others in society. Yeah. That is powerful stuff. And you're helping us connect the dots to how one-on-ones are a place where we can start to make that happen.
Yeah, it's the thing that each person can do. That's kind of what's exciting about it. There's very little cost of entry. Everyone can do it. And, you know, as individuals reflect on when they've been most happy in their lives and in their jobs, it's typically when they feel seen and respected and heard. So now you have that opportunity to make sure you give it to others.
And there's one other key point you had made in the book that I just can't let us go without talking about, which is you mentioned that this is the place where the manager gets to practice out their values.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about what you mean by that.
Well, if you ask managers, tell us about the values you hold as a manager, almost invariably, you're going to have comments like, oh, elevating people, you know, helping my people be the best they can be, supporting teams, right? These are things that people say. It's just that typically we don't necessarily behave in accordance with our values because we get caught up in being too busy. We get caught up in doing our own stuff. And so these one-on-ones are that manifestation of values. And then I'll offer this. So I took the positive approach to your question, but there's a negative approach. Think about what you signal to your people if you don't do these. Because that's communication. If you don't do these, you are basically signaling to your people that they're not all that important, that other things are more important. Just like if you cancel these one-on-ones, right? That's a signal that they don't really matter. And by the way, this is actually one of the neat things about the book is that it's applicable to other phases of your life. And for example, you could be doing one-on-ones with your kids. Now, I'm not talking about rigorous calendar holds, but I'm talking about intentional interactions with your kids. Just like manager versus direct report, we have ace, you know, we have power that's not the same. One person has more power than the other, the parent. But if all of our conversations with our kids are basically status updates or nagging, hey, have you unloaded the dishwasher? Did you do your homework? Did you do this? Did you do that? That relationship doesn't develop. And so a lot of the skills and practices that are talked about in the book can be applied at home for intentional interactions.
It's an incredible book. Glad we met. The Art and Science of One-on-One Meetings. Even at my advanced age, I picked up techniques. My one-on-ones are better because of it. And I like to say this book is the total package. It is full of evidence, which I very much appreciate based on my own background, but it's also got practical quizzes, templates, tips. It's inspiring. It really is the total package. It's a fabulous book, and I can't recommend it highly enough. Stephen, I'll ask you this. Where can listeners go to learn more about the book and about you?
Well, thank you. So the best place is really my website, StephenRogelberg.com, StephenRogelberg.com. I've really tried to make it a repository of meaningful information. There are links to buy the book, and I hope people will. I do want to say that it's just so important to me to get the science out there that I'm donating all my royalties to cancer research, the American Cancer Society. And so I hope people will buy the book if they want to learn about one-on-ones, or buy the book if they want to help eradicate cancer. Both are great. But I really hope that we can, you know, I can get the science out there. I appreciate your kind words about the book. I spent just tremendous time on this. I wanted this to be special. When I think about my first book, The Surprising Science of Meetings, which, you know, obviously did super well. I was really happy that, like, the Washington Post named it the number one leadership book. This book was so much harder to write because this book tells a story and every chapter is connected. And And when you write about something that is both the science and the art, there's a lot more nuance. And I try to represent that nuance in the book.
It's incredibly balanced. And listeners, I'm going to have those links for you in the show notes. So one click away from getting to the book, learning all about Stephen's website. Great videos on there too. Like totally practical. You have totally crushed it. I agree 100% with what you're doing and saying and putting out there. So Stephen, thank you so much for being with us today.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me. It was a real treat.
Here are my artful yet oh-so-scientific top three takeaways from today's episode. 1. Make the time. One-on-one meetings are too often an afterthought. This is a miss, since these meetings offer a unique opportunity to boost employee performance and commitment while helping you exercise your personal values as a manager. 2. Open the door. While the manager should own the meeting cadence, your direct report should be allowed to own the meeting agenda. You can get a status update whenever you like, but the one-on-one offers a unique opportunity for your direct report to have their needs met. 3. Get it in writing. When you document your discussion notes and action items, you're doing more than practicing good meeting hygiene. You're demonstrating to your direct report that you sincerely care about their perspective and welfare. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Strong reviews help shows like mine get noticed. And be sure to subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss your next opportunity to learn, lead, and live at your best. Thanks for making this investment in your leadership ability. And thanks for sharing this podcast with another aspiring leader who needs to hear it. All right, leaders, until next time, don't just manage the business when you can lead the people.